It is 6:06 in the Twin Cities, and it's, gosh, it's just beautiful out right now. Watching, though, the Kentucky Derby, and it looks like a monsoon just happened there. I mean, what the heck?
Well, it's been raining there. Over really the central plains,
right.
Missouri into southern Illinois into Kentucky and Tennessee, it's been raining quite a bit over the last week. And so once you get all this rain that's been flooding parts of Missouri, parts of Arkansas, it moves east, it gets over Kentucky and Tennessee. That's where you're going to get a lot of this sloppy track that you had. Now, it was a sunny race. There was sunshine over the over Churchill Downs,
and the winner was like the favorite.
Yes, Always Dreaming. He was the morning betting line favorite. He had been the favorite all week coming in.
Okay,
and I believe at post time he was actually a co-favorite. Irish War Cry,
right? Okay,
the other horse that they both went off at 9-2.
But these horses are, you know, just looking at like the replay here, it's like they look like they were just in the mud, you know.
Yeah.
Just,
oh yeah. Sloppy tracks happen all the time. I mean, right. you're not going to change the date of the race. I mean, everything centers around the first Saturday in May to get the Kentucky Derby going.
Right.
So this is the first race of the Triple Crown. Now the favorite has won. Now we'll see if he can continue to be he'll be the favorite going into Baltimore.
Right.
For the Preakness Stakes. But we'll see if he can continue this run and take it on to New York, take it on to Belmont.
We will see. Listen, we have a really great show. And I'm glad that we set it up this way because I think we've got a couple of interesting medical stories here coming up in this hour about homeopathic natural, you know, healing oils, all those things you hear about. And I think for some people, they do help. But we're going to talk to somebody about that. We're also going to talk to the latest news about inoculations and vaccines. And as a parent, I know it's scary when you take that tiny little child and that first year, it feels like you're just injecting this baby with everything. Well, there's been sort of a backlash in some communities, and now there's actually an outbreak of measles here in the Twin Cities, which is really scary stuff. I mean, that is a potentially fatal disease. So we're going to talk to somebody about that, the myths versus the realities about vaccines. And I know a lot of parents are worried about that. In the 7 o'clock hour, we really have something special going on. My friend Liz Cullen did a fascinating story about a family that purchases a home and they get a ton of snakes in the home. I mean, can you imagine? I can't. I mean, that would just completely freak me out. We're going to revisit her story and talk to an expert about that. We're also going to talk with an author about, and think about this, the 10 plants that changed the course of Minnesota history. I mean, think about that. And there's actually a book that was written about the 10 plants that changed the course of world history. I think cotton was one of them. I mean, just think about it. But this is what changed the course of Minnesota history. It's a fascinating look at different kinds of plants. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, folks, I am looking for your calls, your texts, your questions. We're going to revisit a story that I did earlier this week that took a long time to put together. It's about the tragic killing spree involving Andrew Cunanan. And he was the serial murderer who I think is obviously best known for killing Gianni Versace in July of 1997. But it all started here, folks. And it started with the deaths of two wonderful men here. And then it moved on to Chicago. It moved on to New Jersey. And then it finally moved on that year to South Beach and the killing of Gianni Versace. So we're going to play my story. And I actually ended up going all over the nation trying to find this killer, trying to find Andrew Cunanan. And I ended up going down to South Beach that year. And it's a look back at some missteps that occurred here. We'll revisit with one of the witnesses here. We'll talk to her. But I'd love to hear your thoughts, your calls, your concerns. This is during the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to talk about that. My friend David Schultz is actually in Israel this week. So he is not available. Normally, we visit with him in the 8 o'clock hour. But the story of Andrew Cunanan, all the networks are doing it. Dateline did a two-hour special a week ago Friday. I know that CBS 48 Hours is doing it as well. 2020 is doing it. Another FX actually is revisiting their very successful and really amazing series on O.J. Well, this is what they're doing. They did the O.J. story, and that won all kinds of awards. They're revisiting the Cunanan story. So I just want everyone to know that the 9 o'clock hour – or 8 o'clock hour, excuse me, we are going to be revisiting that story, and I would love to hear from you. We're going to put out the phone numbers for that hour. So anyway – we've got a great show lined up for you. Esme Murphy, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe. We're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by an expert on natural healing and what you should know. Does it provide any relief? How do you put it together with conventional treatments? All of those answers coming up on News Radio 8. It is a gorgeous evening. 67 degrees here in the Twin Cities. That's amazing. 614, Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe. This half hour, we are going to talk about natural healing. You know, what does that mean? What does that mean? Essential oils, you've heard that term. Does it work? Does it help? Well, joining us right now is Bruce Barras. He is the owner and Naturopathic Center for Natural Healing in Minneapolis, and joining us right now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me, Ezra.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you, Bruce, when people ask you, hey, essential oils, natural healing, does it really work? Obviously, you're in the business, but what do you tell them?
I tell them that it's been based on a long tradition of usage. I first started studying herbal medicine, which essential oils are a part of, about almost 40 years ago. And it's natural medicine is based upon applied usage and clinical usage. In other words, if you use an oil, for instance, like eucalyptus oil for a skin infection, it helps. If it doesn't help, you wouldn't be using it, as people have used it over a period of time. So I believe it's useful, and I use it myself exclusively. And can be either a complement, or for some people who aren't accepting a regular medicine, it can be alternative for a number of conditions.
All right. And so I know that there's sort of a broad array of different kinds of natural and homeopathic medicines and remedies available. Mm-hmm. What would you say to somebody? And eucalyptus, I think people, you know, are familiar with that. Mm-hmm. Aloe vera, I think people are familiar with that, perhaps for burns. But where do you get in, and how do you decide when to use something? When do you recommend it to your physician? Are there certain hospitals or, you know, general practitioners who are using it more as a complementary aid to help people?
There are some. I don't have a list of who is, really. There tends to be some who dabble in it, and I know some of my heart patients who their medical doctors are recommending fish oil and things like this. So there's some crossover going on. And sometimes there's people going to separate ways, people doing either natural or doing more medicinal, or people using it in conjunction with each other and either informing their doctor or not. There seems to be some variation going on. We're kind of a time of transition and change, and it's been that way for a long time, so we just have to weave our way between the two systems in some ways.
Okay. And so you've been doing this for 40 years.
Yes.
Bruce?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And is anything changed? Because 40 years ago, people looked at this and kind of were like, oh, this is weird and kind of kooky and crazy. What has changed here? And which essential oils, which homeopathic remedies do you think are the most broadly accepted and the ones that people might want to consider first?
Well, you know, lavender oil is an essential oil. It's good for relaxing, and that's something that could be used, considered first, perhaps. The peppermint oil has various kinds of properties. You know, it's kind of confusing. We're used to medicines, and medicines have a very narrow range of action in some ways, and herbs and herbal oils tend to be a little bit broader action against. So peppermint oil can be for upset stomach. It can be for digestive disturbances. There's a number of reasons it could be used. So there's a number of oils. Oregano oil is used for topically for skin problems and for some kind of infections. Now, essential oils should be used with some understanding of how to use them. And if they're used topically in the skin, normally they're diluted with an olive oil or something like this because they're very strong. So there's some knowledge about how to use them properly. So it might be better either read up on it or to find a practitioner who's using essential oils.
And what kind of person would be a practitioner? I mean, what kind of training do they get?
Well, they'd either be a traditional naturopath or an herbalist for the most part. People who do homeopathy may or may not do essential oils because there's thought to be a conflict between the two. So there's not as much of that.
Help us out here. What is the difference between homeopathy and then using...
Homeopathy is kind of an energetic medicine using very dilute amounts of substances prepared in a special way that help activate a change in the body. They're kind of like electricity. They're not well understood. They're not accepted medically very well.
Okay. But how about the essential oils? Are they being used by traditional MDs? Or are traditional MDs increasingly looking at this as a supplement to their treatments?
In some situations, they are, and sometimes it's nurses who are into this, getting into the hospitals and using them that way. And they're being allowed to do it because it's considered a topical thing, or it's not taking a medicine necessarily, so they're allowed in because of that reason.
Okay. And let me ask you this. I mean, how much of this is the placebo effect? I mean, lavender obviously is a gorgeous smelling scent. And I know that that's been recommended for years for many, many things. Mm-hmm. And you smell it and you relax it. Yeah. You feel more relaxed. But how much of that is sort of the, as I said, the placebo effect that you're kind of thinking, well, gee, this smells really good and I'm more relaxed. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's it.
Yes, don't get me started. You can do a PhD on what's a placebo and what's not. Even medications have a placebo effect. That's one of the reasons they work.
I think that's very fair.
We think placebo means that it's fake, and it just means we don't know how it works, or it's done without a chemical necessarily. So placebo.
Well, I think the mind is a very powerful tool.
It is,
and I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
But let me ask you about other alternative treatments like acupressure or reflexology, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. I mean, there's so much out there now, and I think a lot of consumers wonder and worry and think, well, should I try this? Maybe it will help, especially people who are suffering with a chronic condition.
Well, it's not that dangerous, and it doesn't take too much difficulty to try a couple treatments to wait to see if it's going to help you or not. You know, acupressure or reflexology, like acupuncture, is all based upon the idea that when we're not well, the energy system in our body is not flowing properly, and we want to help improve that to get it flowing properly again. And acupressure is either done with pressure or it's done with finger points on the body using the biomagnetic pressures in the body to create circuits in the body, the same way we would with electrical acupuncture. But it's to move through that energy in the body. I use it myself and find it to be effective for situations myself.
And, I think, like some people, and this is not just adults we're talking about, I mean, medical practitioners are considering this for children as well.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right?
I think so.
What would you advise somebody? This is something you've been looking at for years. In the 40 years you've been doing this, what has changed? And are there differences and advances in this area?
There are more remedies available, and there are more different usages than there used to be. There are more essential oils available than there used to be. There's more vitamins available than there used to be. And if we go on the Internet, we find a plethora of information, not all of it true. And that's confusing to people because there's all kinds of people promoting things that may not be true on the Internet sometimes.
That is true. I think we all know that. But what at the end of the day here, I mean, I think every single person I know is spending more out of pocket mm-hmm. on medical care. And yeah. For those that are suffering from chronic conditions,
mm-hmm.
These are the people who are exploring these kinds of alternatives the most because they're spending the time, the money, they're not getting the relief, but yet this is an additional cost.
Yeah.
And what would you say to those people?
Yeah, well, I would say health is worthwhile spending the money on it. There's if you're not getting well in one system, it doesn't pay to keep doing the same thing that's not working for you. If it's working for you, that's fine. If it's not, then it may be a good time to explore alternatives.
In terms of satisfaction, because you've been doing this, as I said, for 4 decades, is there one particular like set of essential oils or one essential oil that seems to be getting more patient satisfaction than others?
Oh.
I mean, what's the oil that people come to you and say, oh, my gosh, this was really great?
Well,
or are there more than one? And if there are, so
there's more than one, and like there's a combination we use for sleep, but it's not just one herb. It's a passion flower, lavender, gota cola, skullcap, and passion flower.
Is that like a tea, or is
no,
it?
That's like an herb. It's, again, essential oils means it's an oil extraction process. It's a different way of preparing an herb. When we make an herb tea, we're using a water extraction. That's a different thing. It's not quite as concentrated again. And tends to be more safer. Herbal oils can be a little concentrated, so they should be used properly.
Okay, but is there one or two that seem to get the best reviews from people? Or
peppermint oil just comes up a lot, and then that's one that comes up quite a bit.
And again, what is that used for? Because I know you mentioned
it's used
that before.
For anything from headaches to stomach upset. So it's kind of hard to figure out according to the regular medical system.
Okay, and like when you say peppermint oil, how do you consume it? Do you put it in, as I said, your tea or
oils? Essential oils are either used topically. In other words, they might be applied to a certain part of the body, like the forehead or the back of the head.
Oh, really?
And they can also be put in an infuser to allow them to evaporate into the air again, like eucalyptus oil. You might do that with in some situations.
Okay, so my friend Jonathan Lowe is nodding, saying yes. So you put the peppermint oil on the forehead?
Well, let me give you an example. I recently had an incident.
Not in the forehead.
I had an incident where I woke up with a very stiff neck to the point where I was...
You're a healthy guy, slender, fit.
I have had issues with just neck cramping and sleeping on it in weird positions, and
right.
So the next day it's really bad, and it's hard for me to even turn my head.
Right.
There was and my mother is background. My mother has been into natural sort of healing and natural conditions for many years.
Okay.
And so I've some of that has rubbed off on me. But there was a coworker of mine. I got up one morning, had a very badly cramped neck, barely could move my neck, barely could move my head, twisted from side to side. And she had a peppermint oil, a roll-on canister, a small roll-on
really?
Canister. And basically what you would do is you would roll this on the back of your neck in that affected area and just go ahead and use that sparingly, but you'd use it consistently and try to loosen up the neck muscles and get it to where you could turn and sort of stretch out your neck.
Did it help?
It did help. And
did you like go around smelling of peppermint oil? Which I love peppermint.
Do.
Yeah,
you do smell of peppermint.
I love that
oil.
Smell personally.
And then later that evening, there was a health food store that I go to fairly often, and I was going to get something for myself, and I got a topical cream that had peppermint oil infused
really?
Into
okay.
it, and you could use you can use it in different ways, but you would rub it right on the infected area, yes.
So natural medicines can be used for chronic long-term conditions that we've had a long-term time, but it's also, we all have things like Jonathan has that come up, and if we can treat them naturally and simply to help them go away when they're happening, then they don't become chronic again. So natural health remedies can be very helpful for those kind of things also.
Well, as I said, he's, a slender, fit-looking guy, that's where
I could use some time at the gym. I really could, honestly speaking.
We're used to waiting until men especially are used to waiting until they break down to go to the doctor, and that's kind
well,
of...
Well, yeah.
If we can do it earlier, and more of a lifetime, I'm getting out in my years now, so there's things that I treat myself, and I regard myself as being very healthy, but I still have some issues.
Well, who doesn't these days? We're chatting with Bruce Borras. He is an expert on naturopathic and it's with the Center for Natural Healing. Bruce, where should people go for advice? Do they just Google it on the internet? I mean, where can people find you?
Well, they could look under natural healing or nature paths, or they can check with a health food store or friends who've gone to someone like this.
Okay. And Jonathan mentioned peppermint oil, and next time I get all messed up here, I might try that. And any others that you can suggest that are pretty good?
Oregano oil for any skin condition or where there's an infection going on, something like that.
You mean like an eczema or?
An eczema or a fungal infection or something like this. Oregano oil is antibacterial.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was such a thing as oregano oil. Okay. And obviously there are many sort of like, you know, essential oils are sold, I think, in a lot of you know, places. I'm sure that you have them and other, like, you know, co-ops have them as well. But,
you know, we've heard about this recent outbreak of measles that's happening, and I don't see a lot of people with measles. It's not happened very often, so I went through my remedies today, and there's two, three homeopathic remedies for that that are very helpful, and certain vitamins that are helpful for that. So I realized what would happen with that. And it also said that these children are not eating right or they wouldn't have such a big outbreak of measles.
Well, okay, you know something? That is the perfect segue into teasing ahead. Sir, thank you so much.
Okay.
You know, we do have to take a break because we have to give you some weather. I will bring that up because we will speak with an expert about an outbreak of measles. I believe this expert is going to cite that this particular outbreak is related to the fact that people are not getting their children vaccinated. But this is a very, very serious illness, one that can be deadly, and that at one time, you know, a number of decades ago, was deadly. Interesting, you know, that Bruce mentions that there are some, you know, homeopathic remedies. I'll ask that of our next guest, Dr. Don Martin. But first, we do have to take a break. After the break, we'll give you some weather, and then we will talk about the outbreak of measles. And I think the pushback from a number of people, including our president, who's raising questions about vaccines and children and should we be getting vaccinated. So keep it right here. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 6:33 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe, we are trying to reach Dr. Don Martin, who's with the Pediatrics Department at HCMC, to talk about the outbreak of measles. We're having a little bit of trouble here coordinating with her. We may have a number that might be slightly off, but anyway, as I said, we hope to get in touch with her and kind of figure that out. I mean, it was interesting to hear Bruce Boras talk about that situation and how difficult, you know, and the kinds of alternative remedies there are for different kinds of things, including measles. One of the problems, though, is that, you know, I'll be interested to see if we do get Dr. Don Martin, just to see if for somebody like, for an issue like that, I think that can be something that is extremely difficult. And so I think that that's something that we'll have to check on and see. I do want to let you know, as we try and get Dr. Martin, what lies ahead here. In the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to revisit a story that my friend and colleague Liz Cullen did about somebody who bought a new home and in the span of just 6 months found 95 live snakes inside the basement. And I, you know, I'm somebody who freaks out with a mouse, much less live snakes. So we're gonna talk about that, and then we're gonna talk with a pest control expert because I think almost anybody, no matter where you live, has some kind of issue here in Minnesota. You know, we are such a wonderful place, but let's face it, one of the things that's so great is that even if you live in the immediate metro area, I live in Minneapolis. We've got all kinds of animals in our backyard. It's wonderful, but you also occasionally might have the mouse come in, that kind of thing. Also, in the 7 o'clock hour, we are going to talk with Mary Meyer, who's a professor and an author who's written a book called 10 Plants That Changed Minnesota. I think this is a really fascinating book. There's actually a book that has been written on the world perspective that is really interesting, that about the 10 plants that actually changed all of the U.S. And as I said, we're going to continue to try and do that. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to revisit a story that I did this week that was for WCCO television that was one of the most difficult stories I have worked on in a long time. And I don't mean to say, and I don't mean to dismiss or minimize what the story was about and say that, oh, this was so hard on me. But it was a tragic story that happened 20 years ago in which two very wonderful people from Minnesota were killed, murdered. And the man who killed them ended up going on this spree of killings and ended up killing Johnny Versace. It started here. And it was a series of murders that at first, even here in Minnesota, did not get the attention that it deserved. I think it was, in fact, perhaps dismissed because, as one investigator said to another reporter, they thought it was, quote, a gay thing. But Andrew Cunanan was responsible for this spree killing. And it took the lives of five wonderful men 20 years ago. And I revisited that story because I covered it. I revisited that story Wednesday night on WCCO television. You can find the story at WCCO.com. What was interesting and so sad looking back is that all I could think of was the level and breadth of this tragedy. Yes, there were missteps. Yes, there were indications that police departments, including the one here in Minneapolis, did not have the kinds of connections to the gay community. But it's a story that I think happened at the tail end of the AIDS epidemic. And there are so many issues about this story. And I'm grateful to my colleagues that helped me put it together this past Wednesday. The stories at WCCO.com. There was so much, though, that I wanted to get in this story and then I couldn't, and that I wanted to express because of what I remember reporting on 20 years ago, which obviously was a very long time, and then what I reported on this year. So tonight at 8 o'clock, after the news break, so about 8:10, we're going to play that story. I'm going to give sort of my thoughts. I'm going to welcome phone calls, 651-989-9226, 1-866-989-9226. This is at 8:10, folks. And we're going to revisit the hunt for Andrew Cunanan. And I think it's really important for people to look at this story and what it was and what we reported on and what we learned. And it's a difficult story because it was hard to put it together because we did so many stories back then in 1997. And I tried my best to put it together. Anyway, so we're going to revisit that. We're also going to revisit and visit with one of the original people that I interviewed in 1997, the caretaker of one of the apartments in downtown Minneapolis. But now I believe we do have Dr. Don Martin, who is a pediatrician with HCMC. And we're going to talk about this new outbreak of measles here in the Twin Cities. Dr. Martin, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Dr. Martin, let me ask you, why are we seeing an outbreak of measles in 2017 in the Twin Cities?
Well, that's a great question. Unfortunately, we're seeing an outbreak mostly in unvaccinated children. So we know that for most of the children in Minnesota who have received their MMR vaccine at one and then usually a second dose at kindergarten, they're very well covered against this serious vaccine-preventable disease. So, again, sadly, it's mostly in children who are unvaccinated.
Let me ask you, Dr. Martin, so this is happening against, amongst children that aren't vaccinated.
Yes.
One of the things that's difficult is that I think a lot of people have anxieties about the number of vaccinations that children get, especially when they're that little. I mean, it's hard. You've got this tiny little thing and you're taking them to the doctor every few weeks and we got them all. But I remember thinking, gosh, this is a little baby, and it's hard.
You know, it is hard to think about a baby getting, you know, a number of injections, and I certainly can understand that sometimes it can feel overwhelming to a young parent. But the vaccines that we're giving today are very safe, and they're studied very rigorously in the combinations that we've been using now for decades. And they're protecting our infants and children against very serious diseases like whooping cough, measles, meningitis, pneumonia, you know, diseases that I think some of us, you know, who have, or younger parents maybe have not seen these diseases. But I do remember, you know, as a young child and certainly hearing from my parents about outbreaks of these dreaded diseases and, you know, families and parents being interested in anything they could do to protect their infants and children. So we certainly want to do the best that we can as pediatricians and in public health to protect, again, against these very dreaded diseases.
Right.
And
but what you're saying is that the measles outbreaks you are seeing here amongst children here are amongst children that have not been vaccinated.
Yes, it's predominantly against children who have not received the measles vaccine.
Okay. And are most there any children, cases where children who have been vaccinated, because, and again, I think it's like a series of three vaccinations. Are there any cases of children who have gotten measles who have been vaccinated that you know of?
And I realize So measles is given, there are two doses of that vaccine, one that we give at around age one and one that's given in kindergarten. And I think the health department reported on Friday that we're up to now 45 cases. And I think 43 of those cases are in unvaccinated individuals. So there are one or two cases in this outbreak where individuals have received the vaccine. Most of the time, if that occurs, the disease is milder. But okay, this is predominantly an outbreak in unvaccinated children.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So if you have a child that's vaccinated, and somehow they're exposed to a child that has not been vaccinated and has measles, I mean, is that how they're getting it? And is there something about their particular immune system? And I hear what you're saying, that it's less serious. But is there something about the kids that have been vaccinated that are still getting it that makes them especially vulnerable?
Well, I'll be honest, I don't know the unique circumstances of, again, the one or two individuals that have been vaccinated, whether they're more vulnerable immunologically or their personal history. I don't have that information. I think the important thing for people to realize is that if your child has been vaccinated, if they've gotten the first dose, usually we estimate that's about 95% protection against measles. And after you've had that second dose, usually at age 4 to 6, you're pretty close to 98% to 99% protected against getting measles. So I think...
And measles can be deadly. Am I right?
Yes. And I think, you know, that's a very important thing to remember, is that this is a potentially deadly disease. It's a serious disease. It's highly contagious. If I were in a room of individuals and I coughed and I had measles and there were individuals in that room that were unvaccinated, 90% of them would get measles. It is highly contagious. So we have tremendous respect for this infection. We want to protect children. We know that complications from measles include diarrhea, ear infections, pneumonia, hospitalization, and sometimes even brain infections or encephalitis, and unfortunately, death.
Oh.
So it is a disease that we need to respect, and we need to really be grateful that we have a vaccine that can protect us against it.
Let me ask you this. President Trump has indicated and made a number of statements suggesting that he has concerns about vaccines. He has been backed up by and actually has had meetings with somebody who I think most people would automatically consider to be on the opposite side of the aisle, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of the late Bobby Kennedy. And they have expressed concerns about vaccinations and also talked about this suggestion, which is remains out there, about some perhaps link to autism. From where you sit as a medical doctor, as a pediatrician at Hennepin County Medical Center, one of the best facilities anywhere, what do you say to that? Because that comes up time and time again.
Mm-hmm. Well, firstly, I would say that there is no scientific evidence to support a cause and effect between MMR and autism. And I think...
Or any other vaccine?
Or any other vaccine.
Okay, because the president, you know, before he was president, has tweeted about this, and there are a lot of other people that believe it, even though people such as yourself, medical professionals, have just gone to the mat time and time again and say, no, there's no evidence of this.
There is no evidence of this. And I know that there is a very common concern about that, and I'm aware of some of the things that President Trump has been tweeting, communicating. But if you really go to the literature and you go to science, there is no association. Vaccines are some of the most rigorously studied medications and things that we do in medicine. I have great confidence in the safety of our vaccines. I have vaccinated all my own children. I recommend it for my own patients.
That's a biggie. I think if you have a doctor that vaccinates their own children, I mean, you know, yes, you are a medical professional, but you are a parent first. And this is what you say. You have gotten your children all these vaccines.
Yes, and I would
I should say that I've gotten my children all the vaccines that are available. You know, I have the utmost respect for our pediatrician. I mean, my children are teenagers now, and I, you know, if he tells me that this is something that's good and important, I trust him. You know, and we've gone with that.
You know, and I think that that's an important thing to emphasize, that you know, families. I really recommend that families who have young children have a health care provider that they trust, whether it's a pediatrician, a family doctor, a nurse clinician, a nurse practitioner, someone that they can have these conversations with, that they can get reliable information from. You know, and I think the other thing that we sometimes do is we don't talk about the risk of leaving our children unvaccinated. And I think what's going on right now in the Twin Cities is an example of that. We make a decision, we leave our children vulnerable to very serious diseases. And I really would feel terrible if an infant whose parents chose, say, not to vaccinate against HIV meningitis or pneumococcal pneumonia, you know, if that infant or child for some reason ended up, you know, getting that infection and succumbing to it in a serious way. That's a tragedy.
And,
so I think that.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't mean to cut you off, Doctor, but so you're saying, are you finding in your practice, though, and I don't know how many vaccines the kids, these babies get, and I don't know if there are more, but I think any parent, you know, it's a little tough, you know, when you see these little children get vaccinated, it is a little overwhelming. Are there some vaccines that people are skipping more than others?
Well, you know, I would say that there probably is more resistance to the measles vaccine and perhaps to influenza. Most parents, I think the important thing to emphasize is that most parents, most families in Minnesota say yes to vaccines. They want their children protected. I think some of the concerns that come up are commonly around the MMR, which we've talked about.
And that's the measles one. And that's where you need two. And why that one? I mean, why are people more concerned about this one? I mean, that was like a million years ago for me. As I said, my kids are teenagers. Yeah. I know we got them both, but why are people more concerned about that one?
I think the concern is with respect to this association, if you will, with autism. And again,
been completely debunked.
I do think it's been completely debunked. Again, I think there is sound and clear and very rigorous scientific evidence that there is no association with either the measles. We don't have measles-only vaccine anymore in this country, but the MMR vaccine and autism. And I think we need to continue giving that message and reassuring parents. And what we've seen actually in my own practice during this outbreak, we have had concerned families come back to us and say, I want the MMR. I don't want my child to get measles. I want to start with, I want to go forward with this vaccine. So we have seen a lot of acceptance now in our own practice at HCMC of families coming forward and wanting the vaccine.
Okay. Can I ask you about another vaccine? Because as I said, I do have teenagers, the HPV vaccine. Because mm-hmm. That's something that I've gotten my children that, and it's a little bit difficult to think about. Well, if your children are going to be sexually active and, because they're pretty young when they get it. And anyway, tell us about what that does and your thoughts about that one, because I think that's one that I hear parents talking about as the mother of teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Well, the HPV vaccine is a vaccine that we routinely recommend for adolescents at age 12. And it prevents...
For both boys and girls.
For boys and girls, it prevents cervical cancers, anal genital cancers, and genital warts. And we know, again, that it's highly effective. It protects against probably close to 80% of cervical cancer in young women. And we know that if we give the vaccine early, we are more effective. And we time it with other vaccines that we routinely give to teenagers, including a meningitis vaccine and their tetanus, whooping cough booster.
Okay. Because I think for a lot of parents, including me, it's very difficult when you look at something like this and you think, well, my child's not sexually active, obviously, at 12. But it's sort of a leap. And again, I am very grateful that, my family has had my children have had the benefit of a fabulous, fabulous pediatrician. And so if he says it, I'm there.
You're there. That's great.
It is sort of a difficult moment there. You're already dealing with all these other things that are happening with your child, and they're suddenly, and then you're like, really? Well, and it's hard. I think it's hard for people.
I think it's understandable by why it might be uncomfortable, but there is actually good literature out there to suggest that there's nothing about getting the vaccine that increases sexual activity or promiscuity, that it really is something that we know that with respect to timing and how the vaccine works, that it is indeed more effective if we give it early.
Okay.
And we know that we have teenagers in already at that time, at a very important time to begin a vaccine series. And it has made more sense in how we deliver care to teenagers to do it at that time. We know the protection then lasts through a period when they might be more vulnerable.
Okay. If somebody has questions, if they are just not sure, if they're wondering, is there someplace they can go to? Where do you go? Because I think these are people who are well-meaning parents who are having a tough time here in some cases. What would you suggest they do? Or is there someplace they can turn to for answers or questions? in addition to their own physician?
Yes, I think there are several places that I would recommend. One would be our own health department. We have an excellent health department, and I would go to the Minnesota Department of Health, and you can look up a particular vaccine, and there's information there. It's categorized
it's MD, for Minnesota Department of Health, which is easy
Minnesota
to get.
Minnesota Department of Health is a good source.
All right, well, listen, I'm sorry, I have to cut you off there, Dr. Martin. I apologize,
okay.
But great information. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yes, and thank you so much for having me on.
All right, absolutely. We do have to take a break. We got news at the top of the hour. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.